knowledge they got. Legal points and counterpoint, yeah, you're not a drill. From sports to Hollywood and the politics world. Don't forget the current events that occur. Plus a couple jabs here and there. Yeah, airman, listen on.
Okay, wait. You're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. I'm joined by Mark Carman. We are broadcasting from San Diego as we participate in the U.S. Marine Corps Educator Workshop. But I'm caught off guard. We are having Rich Lenkoff on the show. Maybe I've heard the song before. I'm not sure because there's so many elements to it, Rick, that I'm not sure what to lock into right now. Rich?
Probably the best reggae theme for any legal podcast I would venture out there.
That might be what it is. I think it's a little bit rap. It's a little bit reggae. Carm, any thoughts on the theme music? Do you wish we need theme music for this trip. Maybe some reggae rap for our trip.
I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought it connected not only with Rich, obviously, who's already all in, but I think with everyone on the show and everyone listening, Patty, quite frankly, I thought it was amazing.
I do. It encapsulates everything you need it to, right? It's two friends. They're going to face off, legal face off with Jason Whiteside. I don't really know who that is, but the brighter half of that is Rich Lenkoff, who joins us. And you wanted to we had a question about the legality of Hillary Clinton choosing Bill Clinton to be on the ticket for the for the election. Is that do you know by any chance if that's legally possible?
It's not, but I want to correct you on the opening song for Legal Face Off. The Friends part is obviously the weakest part of the.
That was the part that jumped out at me. Yeah,
it's the only thing that really rhymed came close to rhyming with WGN. So that's why we put the word Friends in there. But
I see. That
I
makes
digress.
Sense.
So, yes. Bill Clinton, whether he could serve as her VP, the answer is no.
Right.
22nd Amendment, we all know, says that a president can only serve two terms. So he's not running for president, but in order to serve as vice president under the 12th Amendment, he would have to meet the requirements of the president. So in order to be VP, you have to be able to serve as president.
Ah.
And because of the 22nd Amendment term limit, he couldn't serve as president, therefore he can't serve as vice president.
Interesting. So the 12th Amendment makes the 22nd Amendment for him impossible.
Yeah, and interesting. I didn't know this part, but the Constitution doesn't mention the office of vice president. The 12th Amendment was only ratified in 1804.
I think at the time the vice presidency was just the runner-up. I don't think that you ran with a running mate, but I could be wrong. That's a different thing. It's a different segment altogether. But you also had some thoughts on the Aaron Andrews case, and tell us a little bit about what's going on there. And if for people who haven't been following this for the last 7 or 8 years, what is happening now?
Well, so the story of Aaron Andrews, I mean, in a nutshell, well-known sideline reporter, also host of Dancing with the Stars. She was videotaped without her consent, obviously, while she was in a Nashville Marriott a few years ago. As she was, changing, getting ready, she was naked, and this guy altered the peephole so that he could videotape from the hallway into her room and put that on the internet. He served 2.5 years in jail for it, and now she has sued the hotel for negligence for allowing this guy to rent the room next door to her. She's asking a Nashville jury to award her $75 million worth of damages. And her testimony was wrapped up today, and now the defense will start their case.
I'm seeing on the website of the Tennessean newspaper that the defense may say that her career has been helped by all of this. Is that a smart way to go for them?
You know what it is? It's the way it has to go for the defense. I mean, I actually represent a few different hotel chains and have defended cases like this, not exactly like this, but cases where a plaintiff is alleging that, my client, the hotel, did something wrong or violated their standard of care. And listen, at the end of the day, these cases come down to damages, right? I mean, they have to prove, plaintiff has to prove in this case, Erin Andrews, has to prove that she suffered some damage. And it's my job as a defense lawyer. It's the Marriott Hotel's defense lawyer in this case to prove that the damages weren't significant. And listen, as hard as it is to go after Erin Andrews, what happened to her is terrible. But at the end of the day, what they're going to argue to the jury is that not only did her career not suffer as a result of this, but if you compare her pre-2009 career versus post-2009, 2009 being when this occurred, she's done incredibly well. I mean, since 2009, since this happened, she has signed a big contract with Fox. She has become not only a contestant, but a co-host of Dancing with the Stars, a major network TV show. She's had endorsement deals with Reebok and Degree Antiperspirant and an orange juice company. She was host of the Country Music Awards. So if you're looking at it purely from an economic standpoint, her attorneys are going to have a really hard time alleging lost wages. That's the, you know, the key term. You know, there's medical damages and there's economic damages. And she'll want to argue, she's going to argue to the jury that she's had some economic loss. Well, just on a pure, you know, math basis, that's going to be a hard argument to win.
She was very emotional on the stand.
Go ahead, Carm. Sorry, what was that?
Yeah, I mean, she was very emotional on the stand talking about how ESPN forced her to come out and talk about it and before they would put her back on the air and everything that happened. And so she's not, I think, you know, she's talking about mental anguish and all of that, Rich, right? So I'm just curious, you know, you've been around these cases so much. How does a jury go and figure out, well, okay, her earnings were not impacted, but mentally she was put through the ringer. At least that's what she's claiming, and it's hard to argue with that seeing her emotion on the stand. I mean, how do you even judge what the value of that is?
Yeah, for sure. So great question. You know, a jury, when they go back in the room, they're going to have a form to fill out. And the form is going to have slots for different types of damages. It'll have a slot for past pain and suffering, for example. It'll have a slot for future pain and suffering. It'll have a slot for loss of normal life, what's called loss of normal life. It'll have a slot for economic damages. So to answer your question, the jury's going to have to go back and decide what the mental anguish portion of it, because that's, you know, she's not claiming any physical injury. It's easier, I should say, when you're dealing with, you know, a personal injury case. You've got, let's say, a busted shoulder, and you've got $100,000 in medical bills. That's easier to quantify. With mental anguish, she might, you know, she's going to present medical bills. She's going to present her therapist bills. But, you know, it's not like she has surgery. It's not like she has MRIs to submit. So the jury is not going to have a lot to go on. You know, I estimate that she probably has, over the course of, you know, 6 or 7 years, she might have, let's say, $30,000 in medical bills, tops. So does that equate to $75 million worth of damages? That's going to be hard. Psychological trauma, mental anguish, those kind of claims, they're very difficult to prove. You know, a lot of times, I'm not saying Erin Andrews fits this category, but frequently people who are claiming mental anguish, they come to the injury with some prior history. It's very difficult to prove that a one-time incident results in long-term psychological trauma. Now, if anything would, you know, this might qualify. Listen, there's no question that what she went through was incredibly difficult, and the fact that it's on the internet will make it, you know, sort of linger forever. So it has some teeth. It has some value. Does it have $75 million worth of value? I think not. I think it probably would set a record. I haven't done the research, but I bet that would set a record in the state of Tennessee by, you know, probably $40 million for this kind of injury. So I think she'll have a tough time getting that number, but, you know, the jury probably will sympathize with her to some degree and give her something.
I've heard someone talk about how, you know, really the bigger thing for Erin Andrews in this case was to sue Marriott, to have the hotel be in court, to, you know, to show that they were negligent. Is that a component of this? And what do you think about using the legal system to kind of carry out a grudge if that's the case?
Well, I mean, listen, in order for Erin Andrews to recover, she's going to have to prove that the hotel, the individual hotel, was in fact negligent. Remember, the Marriott Corporation was dismissed early on in the case. So the only defendant left in this case is the property management company and the individual hotel. So in order to get to damages, Erin Andrews has to get the jury to agree. She has to convince them that the hotel was negligent. And that's not an easy task. You know, remember, when you check into a hotel, when you go to a retail store, when you eat at a restaurant, you know, those property owners are not guarantors of your safety. It's not like right. Everything that happens at a hotel, the hotel's responsible for. The hotel, in this case, is arguing that this individual created a criminal act, and they can't foresee every criminal act. It's not like there was a history of this happening at the hotel. It's not like right. You know, they were on notice that people would do that all the time. There is an argument to be made that they shouldn't have rented this individual the room next door. But, of course, they're saying that he conned his way into that. So the negligence standard is not as easy to prove. She has to prove that the Marriott Hotel in this case violated their duty of care. I don't think that's a given.
Wow. Well, yes, Craig? Carm, who was going to?
Well, I mean, yeah. I don't yes. mean to make light of the situation here, but, I mean, we're out here in a beautiful Holiday Inn hotel, you know, my window's open. I'm not, you know, there's been points where I have not been wearing any clothes during this show.
Oh.
You know? I mean, I think the way I see it, Richard, she's going to have a real hard time here. I don't get how the hotel's negligent. It's my fault if I don't close the blinds here, right?
Yeah, but it wasn't the blinds. It was hadn't he inserted a camera or done something?
He created
because it was a shared door.
He created a peephole and then he yeah. inserted a camera in it and taped it. That's not the same as forgetting to close your blinds.
Okay, fine. But like, look,
it's different for sure. But the question is, who's responsible for that? Is every criminal who comes into a hotel who does something on property, is the hotel responsible for it? The question is, was the hotel aware of his behavior? Should they have been aware? Should they have rented him the room next door? That's really the key question. If he called up out of the blue and said, hey, you know, I'm a fan of Erin Andrews. I want to be next door to her. And they said, sure, no problem. We'll rent you the room. That is a bit of a problem. But again, that's a bit of a leap from renting someone the room next door to someone whose name you give, to assuming they're going to, you know, do this wacky reverse peephole thing. I mean, that's a bit of a stretch also.
How much can you actually try to prove that the peephole video may have benefited her career? Erin Andrews wasn't exactly an unknown commodity then. She was someone that I think a lot of people would say was on the rise as a person in general. And getting the hosting gig at Dancing with the Stars, those kind of things, they could have elevated her career anyway. Is there any argument back to that conversation of the people video might have benefited her to say, who knows if she would have been as successful or more without it?
Yeah, 100%. Listen, that's the elephant in the room, right? I mean, that's the way you approach that with a jury is going to decide how they react. You don't want to come out and say, ladies and gentlemen, this people episode helped her, right? It gave her the type of advertising, the type of Q rating that you would otherwise pay, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars for. But the truth is, I believe that's the case. Listen, she didn't want this notoriety. She would have been happy without it. But the way I would approach it to a jury is simply, you know, take a piece of paper and, you know, do a line down the middle and say before people and after people. Before people, she was, you know, a fairly well-known reporter, but that was it. After people, she had, you know, half a dozen national commercials. She was hosting a major network, you know, game show or dance show. She has hosted, you know, different award shows. Her career has soared. So you don't want to come out and sort of say that in black and white, but that's the message that I think the jury will take back to the room.
Wow, there's a lot of different angles to this. We thank you so much for your time, Rich Lenkov, and we'll talk to you again very soon. We have to run because we got to take a break here, but I want to tell everyone to listen to WGN Plus and Legal Face Off with Rich Lenkov and the other guy. I think that should be the new title. I'm looking forward to the new theme song for that.
I like it.
All right, then. And Jason Whiteside. More after this on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN.